Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast, episode 86.
Tang,
go.
Up a full count. Down a major third. Now drop an octave.
Cool blue.
Go.
Up a perfect fifth.
Gravity one. Go ahead. Gravity one.
Nothing. Nothing at all.
Prezit. Prezit.
So start melting, ladies, because the boy is hotter than hot. He's hot, hot,
hot!
The right size, right build, right head, right on.
Right on!
Right on!
And he's got something to say to those 50 billion pair of ears out there.
Pop it, D-Man!
Hi.
Unbelievable!
Something about this boy. You should be very proud of your son. He gives without any thought of reward.
Well, he knows nothing of greed. He has a...
He has special powers.
Yes.
He can see things before they happen. That's why he appears to have such quick reflexes. It's a Jedi trait.
He deserves better than a slave's life.
Hello and welcome to the Plain Label Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Williams, and along with me is my good friend and co-host, Mrs. Rachel Zelag.
Hello!
In this episode, we are concluding our movies about aliens theme, and once again, we are joined by Mr. Sean Pryor.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Thank you again, Eric and Rachel, for having me on the show.
Absolutely. For this episode... We are going to be discussing Close Encounters of the Third Kind, The Fifth Element, and Star Wars Episode One: The Phantom Menace. Before getting into our discussion, we would like to mention that we are proud members of the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. So, Mrs. Zelag, there was this rumor going around. Rumor has it. About you and about this whole 30 nonsense.
What about it?
And about this the sort of clean living sort of business. So what is it that you're consuming, via liquid state as of now?
Water.
God. Ridiculous. This is like the cruise I never knew. okay, water. So, all right, Sean, what are you having?
Well, before the recording, I went to, visit some friends at a local sports bar for a get together.
Good job.
And had about three or four cups of Country Boy beer, and that's a local brewery here. They've become quite popular in the state of Kentucky. I wouldn't be surprised if that stuff starts to hit other states really soon. So I had three or four of those, so I'm good. So now I'm just on juice right now. I got a nice tall glass of OJ right now, so I'm good because I had enough alcohol earlier today.
Well, there you go.
What kind is it? Like a wheat beer or what kind of
this? This one, it's not a wheat, and it's not too hoppy, and it's definitely not a lager. It's more of a Country Boy Cougar Bait. Cougar Bait's more of an amber.
Cougar Bait?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds like my kind of fella.
Yes. They have two or three beers. There's Country Boy, Cougar Bait, Country Boy, Shotgun Wedding, and,
oh my God.
And those are the two. I think those are the two they actually have in cans. All the other kinds, you have to go to their microbrewery in Lexington and drink them there.
Hmm. All right, I'll take a trip.
There you go. Head out to Kentucky.
Oh yeah, well, we got a couple of microbreweries in Lexington, or local breweries in Lexington that are great. Between West 6th, let's see, there's also the Break Room. There is Country Boy. I think there's like two more too. So we got plenty of local beer now.
Nice.
That's awesome. We could do a little tour.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be mad.
What the hell? Cruz likes going to different places and saying, hey, I do a podcast. How about you give me some beer? And they're like, all right.
I do. I went to a brewery and got some some business cards. I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah. We should we should be better about following up on that sort of thing, Cruz.
We should. I know. We as in you.
I was going to say we. I shouldn't say we. I should say that's firmly in my camp.
I smile and get the cards. You're the follow-up guy. I thought you knew how this shit worked.
No, that's right. I actually don't. I don't know what I was thinking there for a second.
Yeah,
It must be this alcohol that I'm drinking, which is a Svedka vodka like normal. And it's not grapefruit. No. It's pretty close. It's not a Bloody Mary either, but it is some V8. But it is called, it's a spicy mango. Is the kind. And it is new and it is not long for this world because it is not great. So I don't see how this would probably, I don't think this is going to sell that well.
You got to be careful with some of those fruit beers.
Yeah, this is this is just a regular V8 mix and it is a mess. So.
Because it's like, you like fruit and you don't like vegetables. Let's try to cover it up with more fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it? Yeah, that's gross.
Yeah, it's like, well, here's tomato juice, but I'm going to put a whole bunch of mango shit in it.
Nope, drink your Bloody Mary like a man.
Yeah, and it's like, so we had the spicy Bloody Mary mix, which is one of the, a standby. And that was finished pretty quick. And then there was this one that I kind of took a flyer on, and I'm like, oh, shit, I guess we have that still. I'm not drinking this cranberry juice because I'm not on my period, and I know Rachel's going to say that.
What?
So I'm not going to have that.
Are you on your period? It's funny. Every time it's funny. I don't give a shit.
Every time. It's used every time, too.
It is. Yeah.
Okay, so that's enough of the drinks. Let's move on to our first film. It is Rachel's selection. It is from 1977, and it is Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Have you recently had a close encounter? A close encounter with something very unusual. Who are you people?
Reported missing in 1945, suddenly appear in the Mojave Desert. A commercial flight is buzzed by a bright object that the pilot wouldn't know how to describe. Roy Neary, while working one night, has a close encounter. The U.S. government determine where the visitors plan to land and create an elaborate cover-up to keep people away. However, a group of people, including Neary, share a vision which draws them to the place and a meeting with new and old friends.
Okay, so, Mrs. Zelag, tell me why you picked this one.
Because you're like, you need to pick a movie about aliens. And I was like, oh my God, fine. No, I'm just kidding. I had seen like bits and pieces of this. I'd never seen the whole thing. And I knew that there was some kind of fun little song in it. And so I was like, let's do it.
Okay. So you were unfamiliar with this one then?
I mean, familiar to the point where like if someone asked me about it, I could probably bullshit my way through it. But
would you never do on anything else?
You don't know me.
That's interesting. Sean, what is your what's your history with this movie?
My history on this movie is a little bit different. I saw it at a drive-in.
Ooh, yes.
That's awesome.
I saw it at a drive-in when I was little, and because it came out in, it was 77?
77, yep.
Okay, so like I had seen it at a drive-in probably 2 years later, actually. Because I was around four years old when I saw it, and it's when drive-ins would have like a new movie and an old movie. You get a double feature. And I remember seeing it in a drive-in and at the age of four, not really paying that much attention until like the weird stuff would pop up or the UFOs would just be flying everywhere. And then the whole music sequence. And then I didn't watch it again, probably until I was a teenager. And then, you know, I watched it in its completion. I was like, yeah, it's a really good film. It's very strange in spots and, but it's cool. But I really didn't truly pay attention to it until like they released, all those different editions on DVD. I think it was, they released they had a director's cut, which was like 137 minutes. They had the, like a special edition cut, which was like 132 minutes, and then like the original cut was like 135. And like I just watched like all three of those like in one sitting one night, and I was like, why did I do that?
Oh my God. That's awesome.
You know, it's just like, I just don't know why. I just like, yeah, I just need to watch all three. And the thing is that there were still things I was like, yeah, I liked it. It was cool. But there was something a little bit different watching it this time. You know, I never really paid attention that like Francois Truffaut was in this movie.
Yeah.
And I didn't like learn about Francois Truffaut until like my last year of college. Cause I had taken like a French cinema / you know, foreign cinema class. And one of my favorite movies is directed by, Francois Truffaut. And it's his first movie ever. 1959's The 400 Blows.
Mm-hmm.
It's an incredible film. It's a great film. So I was like, man, I was like, what's he doing acting in this movie? I was like, that's crazy. I was like, this dude is like one, like, you know, a very well-renowned director. So seeing him in the movie, I was like, oh, I was like, so I had like, you know, I had a different form of interest in the film this time around, as opposed to, man, look at Richard Dreyfuss go crazy and play with the potatoes. You know, like, look at his badass kids. I think I would kind of go crazy too without the UFOs if I had them badass kids in the house. You know, and it's like, you know, Terry Garr was all fine and beautiful. I don't know. She was conflicted. She was just like, man, this dude, man, has lost his mind and we got these badass kids, but I got to do something. And now I'm acting like a jerk, but I'm like, but my man's crazy. So what am I supposed to do? Right. So I got to leave. And so I like all that I got. But the thing is, I think the thing is for me in this film, the things I got from it were the relationships of the characters, like, you know, played by, Francois Truffaut as, Claude Lacombe. When he had his homie Robert, played by Bishop from Aliens, Lance Henriksen. I was more interested in that relationship and the relationship of Melinda and her son.
Mm.
Like those two things, like Melinda Dillon played Jillian. So it was Jillian and her son Barry.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jillian and Barry's story and Claude and Robert's story did more for me than the Roy Neary story. I know probably sounds really strange. But yeah. So yeah, that's what I get from it now.
Okay. I had not seen this until the marathon project again.
Oh, okay.
Which I'm going to save for like 400 episodes, right? Because we're just going to go through that list of ones that I saw there. But anyway.
Okay.
So I hadn't seen it until then. I had always known, you know, obviously that it was a Steven Spielberg film and that it was really well regarded, and I knew that it had to do with aliens, obviously. And so, when I had watched it then, I was like, wow, what am I missing? Like, I don't know why I'm not connecting with it. And so when Rachel suggested this time, I was like, oh, good. Like, this will give me a chance to kind of be in a better mind frame when I see it this time, and I'll be able to appreciate it. And I watched it and I still didn't really like it that much. And I was like, what? And I don't know what it is. I think that, I don't know, like, I didn't like the family that, I didn't like the Neary family. Like, Roy was kind of not that great of a guy to begin with, and his kids were jerk-offs, like Sean said, and I thought Terry.
I'm all jacked up. I'm Mountain Dew. Like that's what I got from that.
Yeah, and Terry Garr's character, like she's trying, but she's also like screaming at her kids, and I was like, whoa, that's not cool. that's not the move you need to make. And so I was kind of interested in that though, because it was like, whoa, look at this guy losing his mind, and he's throwing all the plants in the house, and he's making this dirt pile in the, you know, this mountain in the middle of his house, and I was like, that's...
Yeah, and everyone else just like drew pictures.
Yeah, and I was like, that's fucking crazy. But then once they got to the more of the governmental sort of thing and the with the oh, it's not safe to breathe and here's this compound and all that, I was completely losing interest at that point. I was like, I just didn't care at all. Like I just didn't, because I had seen the movie before, so I kind of knew the end, and so this time watching it, I was just like, ah, just get on with it. Like I'm not interested in this part. So I don't know. I guess I did kind of skip over what you thought, Cruz. What did you make of your own selection here? I'm hoping that you enjoyed it.
I think I'm kind of on the page with you. I think if I would have watched it when I was a little kid, it would have like blown my mind. Like, oh my gosh, there's all these lights and aliens, etc. But you know, I didn't really have anyone to connect to in the movie, because I'm not a crazy old man or a psychotic wife with horrible children or a single mom with an adorable kid. So I didn't really have anybody, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And I thought the alien stuff was really cool. I loved that they like talk to each other using like notes and music. I thought that was really cool. So I actually like, I mean, when the wife left, I was like, oh, fuck, good. Just, you're so loud. Just go. She's just going to watch TV. The TV, like, noise in the background was way more comforting for me than listening to them talk. But, actually, like, you know, the beginning part for me when all the alien shit was going on, I'm like, this is fucking cool. And then the, like, mental part of him, like, trying to come to terms with it, I was like, oh, okay, I don't really care a whole lot. But then I actually, my interest started going up when they started going to the government stuff.
Oh, really?
Because I, you know, I hadn't really sat down and watched this, like I said, and I knew, you know, kind of what happened, but I thought that was like really cool. Like, we need to cover this up. We need to put like sleeping, you know, like crop dust sleeping gas on fucking people. I'm like, this shit is nuts. Like, I'm like, I have like conspiracy red flags like going off in my head. I'm like, how many times have you done this to us? You know? And so like, I thought that part was cool. And then like, who the fuck climbs up the, you know, devil's tower? But, you know,
I'm sorry, not to cut you off, but not only climb up it, but not even really break a sweat.
Right? Well, he tried to fall down like 5 times, but you know, the lady with the purse was doing a better job than him.
Jillian was like, come on, fool.
Right.
Get your ass up here, Richard Dreyfuss. Right?
And I mean, like, I wanted to see like a mini sequel of how the 1945, you know, how the pilots, how they like were reincorporated into life. Like, yes. They like meet some, you know, their wives or who are like 90, however, you know, old they are. And I was actually like kind of bummed that there wasn't a little spinoff where I got to see, you know, kind of what happened to them. So that part was actually, so like beginning, end, legit, middle part. Yeah. Okay. That's fine. But,
sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
I'm apologize. Done.
I think for me, another thing that I enjoy about the film, not only just how, cause the film also has like a bunch of really great, like, you know, if you're on Twitter a lot, how they'll people on Twitter will run that, you know, one great shot or, you know.
Oh,
or,
yeah, yeah.
You know, things like that, like showing people like their favorite shots in, you know, in cinema. And Close Encounters of the Third Kind has a lot of shots like that. Mm-hmm. A lot. They're like a lot of like just well defined, you know, cinematic shots in that film. Like when the boy is, is it Jillian? Like when Jillian's son is Jillian always good? Yeah. When Jillian's son is standing at the door and you got the orange haze coming down. Like,
oh yeah.
Like that is gorgeous and scary. You know what I mean? And so it's beautiful, but yet it's scary at the same time.
That whole scene where they go, where it goes through the keyhole and like through all the windows.
Yeah,
and
the
shit,
kidnapping sequence. Yeah.
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 Yeah. I was put in my notes. I would be losing my goddamn mind. Yeah. We got the oven just freaking out and everything's on and the washing machine and all of that. Just, you know,
right.
I would
Does
be losing
Steven Spielberg
my
Spielberg have like a fetish with making inanimate objects try to frighten people?
I guess for the longest time, yes. Yes, I would have. Yes. I would have to say yes.
Yeah, he has that, and he has father issues because you know fathers always abandon their children in all of his movies.
He totally did.
He does, yeah.
Wow. And but see, the other thing is though, the other thing is that I think what I like about this movie is that it like with Rachel said, you know, it leaves things to the imagination. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to know what happened to those people that got off the UFO as well. It's like, yeah, how did they get, you know, how did they get, you know, fit back into society? You know, what did happen to Roy? You know, because the thing is with Roy, a piece of it, like the way that character was set up, because like there's so many unlikable characters in this movie. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing is, I don't know if that was done on purpose or not, but the thing is that, are you supposed to like be happy for Roy because he found his peace, or should you be concerned for Roy because he may be cuckoo, or are you excited for Roy because he's going to go on an adventure that, you know, very few have ever had the opportunity to take. And then there's just so many questions like, yeah, what happened to Roy? What's his journey now? What is he learning?
Right.
You know, and the whole thing with, you know, playing the music back and forth, like what kind of communication is that? Do they really know what any of this stuff means, or were they just playing the most expensive version of Simon ever back in 1977?
Right?
you know what I mean? Like, I like
that too.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's what I like about a lot of cinema from back then. Is that it left things open to the imagination, because sometimes you shouldn't answer every single question.
Mm. Fair enough.
You know, and because I think my personal thing is when every single question gets answered, it takes things away from the film.
Huh.
And I think it also makes it difficult to tell more stories. If you want to, you know, like say for instance, if they ever wanted to make a sequel, like back then, if they ever wanted to make one, if you answer too many questions, it makes it even harder to make another film. And I think that's why you'll see some franchises nowadays, if the first film or the second film answered way too many questions, it's like, well, fuck, we got to do a prequel. You know, we can't move forward. They know too much. Make a prequel. You know, and so we can fill in all these spots before this movie and this movie and this movie. I think that's another thing that really stuck with me with this movie.
You know, one of the things that I really enjoyed about it, especially this time around, and it's a really small thing, but it's something that I think is really important, is I really enjoyed the design of the aliens at the end.
Yeah.
This almost like daddy long leg looking spider type design with just these pencil thin arms and legs. And I just really thought that was striking, because most of the time you see like the little kind of squatty, gray aliens, or you see, you know, something really crazy, like in one of our next two films. And so I just thought that was kind of cool. Like it was a little variation of the sort of, standard idea, but it's, you know, kind of turned it on its head a little bit.
Yeah.
So I really like that. And then there's all the little ones, all the little guys running around.
Right. I liked those guys. They were cute. I would take one home.
What cracked me up more than anything was that Jillian was taking all those pictures. I'm like, yo, camera, and from where she was, I'm like, yo, camera lens can't catch all that.
Like she's just gonna go, especially then, she's just gonna go into some corner store and have that developed, and there's gonna be no questions raised.
Well, it's just gonna be blurs of lights, and she's gonna be on the news like, I saw the aliens, and they took my kid and brought it back. And they'll be like, okay, lady, okay, whatever you say.
Here's your blotches of red light.
Right.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. All right, well, what else do we have to say about Close Encounters? Anything, Cruiser or Sean?
Well, this was a film, if I remember right, this was a film that I think Spielberg had wanted to do for, like, the longest time. And, like, because, like, he had a contract with Columbia back in, like, 73. And the film didn't get made until, like, 77. And I think what's crazy is that this film was made for $18 million. And you know, production probably started sometime in, like, 75, 76. But it was made for $18 million and eventually grossed over $337 million worldwide.
Wow.
That, you know, that's crazy. Like, that is, you're winning, okay? And not only that, but I really think that people sleep on the special effects of this film. Because, like, you know, those alien ships, that's not CGI, okay? It's not. And, like, that mothership at the end, the way that's designed and like, the color schemes and the lights, it's gorgeous.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's really, really beautiful. And I think people, like, really just, like, kind of, like, slight the, in my personal opinion, I think they slight the special effects work in this movie. To me, it is a good film. I don't think you can make a film like this nowadays unless Chris Nolan gets to direct it.
Ah, Christopher.
I think he's the only cat that Hollywood would allow to make this other than Steven Spielberg again.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And at the same time, I don't think a majority of the things that happen in the film, if they ever remade this film, would not be, they wouldn't let you do it. Because there aren't any likable characters in the film.
Yeah.
You'd
have to have a hero. Like, you'd have to have somebody, you know, like, it would be a single dad and, like, his daughter got kidnapped and all he's doing is trying to get her back and the wife is, like, estranged, but they still love each other and he has some weird phone call at the end before he goes onto the alien spacecraft and you're just chomping at popcorn watching the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And the thing is, now that more and more I think about it, yeah, the characters aren't likable, but I think for this film, I think that's okay. Cause not every film should have likable people. And, you know, Seinfeld's a perfect example of that. All those motherfuckers are the most unlikable people ever.
Right.
I'm sorry.
I think it adds to, because, like, I mean, this is one of the, this is going to sound weird, most real alien movies, I think, like, from ones that I've seen. Like, obviously, like, some of the ones that we've talked about are just, you're, like, immersing yourself into outer space or whatever world that you need to be in. And this is, like, a look, you know, what if aliens came and interrupted our very mundane everyday life? And so I don't like a lot of people. And so, like, this makes more sense. I mean, the fact that you don't, you know, he's not super adorable and charismatic, it makes it more real, I think, that he's just some random guy instead of, you know, a superhero or, I don't know, something else.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. One of the things that I thought was pretty good was the performance of the kids, which Steven Spielberg tends to, for whatever reason, get in all of his films. Is good child performances. You think of, like, Jurassic Park is one of the main examples, or E.T. that comes to mind.
Yeah.
In the trivia for this on IMDb, it says that Stanley Kubrick was so impressed by Cary Guffey, who played the little boy's performance, that he wanted him for the role of Danny Torrance in The Shining.
He wasn't nearly creepy enough.
Well, I know, but wouldn't that have been creepier, though, if he was this innocent-looking little kid?
No, he has to have some sort of creepy element in his face.
Hmm. I don't know. I bet Kubrick would have been able to pull it off, Cruz.
Probably.
I guess.
Yeah.
Ugh. Oh, yeah. That was a bit habitual.
Wow.
And there were also, I guess, a ton of other actors that were up for the role of Roy.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. And did you see that, Sean, where Richard Dreyfuss had to basically lobby to get the position?
Yeah, like, he had been lobbying, I guess, like, all during the filming of Jaws.
Mm-hmm.
you and like from what I've read, some of the different sites that I've read up on this, like Dreyfuss was saying stuff like how he launched a campaign and he would just go into Steve's office and say, look, you know, Pacino doesn't have a sense of humor. You know, Nicholson's too crazy. They can't do this. I can do this. You know, let me play the part. You know, even, I guess like, Gene Hackman turned down the role. Nicholson turned it down because of scheduling conflicts. Hoffman turned it down. Steve McQueen, I guess, was like Spielberg's first choice, but he was like, yo, I like this script, but this role isn't right for me because I can't cry on cue. Mm-hmm. Which is, I don't know if that's true or not, but that's, it's kind of crazy. Like how many different people in 1970, you know, probably 70, 75, 76 when he's getting this ready, like were already ready to roll with Spielberg.
Could anyone else have done, like, can either of you picture any of those people?
You know, I could see Gene Hackman doing it.
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
He's kind of got that, I could be crazy at a drop of a hat kind of thing, and it could also be, kind of a average Joe kind of a character.
Right. I think Nicholson would have been over the top.
I can see that, yeah. That would have definitely been interesting.
And Al Pacino, I don't really.
It seems
see
too.
That one.
Yeah, it almost seems too, mainstream for Pacino at this point.
Right.
You know? Like not artistic enough of a film, like this is more of a Hollywood sort of a film.
He's like, do I get to grow a beard and grow my hair out long? Nah, dude.
Yeah. Okay. Do we have anything else, before we move on?
No.
All right. Well, let's move on to my, oh, actually, before we move on, I should look at my own script. We do want to mention that Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/plainlabelpodcast and choose from over 180,000 audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It's that easy. Go to audibletrial.com/plainlabelpodcast and get started today. So our next film is from 1997. It is my selection, and it is The Fifth Element.
Every 5,000 years.
Remove the shield.
When the three planets are in eclipse, the black hole like a door is open. Evil comes, spreading terror and chaos.
There's nothing that can stop this.
There is only one thing.
Perfect.
The Mundo Chiwan have in their possession the only weapon to defeat evil. Four elements gathered around a fifth.
Hello?
Corbin, sweetheart. You got broken fingers, you can't punch my number?
Hi, Mom.
Welcome home. Have a nice day.
Major Dallas, you've been selected for a mission of the utmost importance.
What mission?
Save the world.
Is that thing solid?
Unbreakable.
Good.
Word of the stone.
I don't know. And even if I did know, I wouldn't tell somebody like you.
There's nowhere else to go.
Hang on.
250 years in the future, life as we know it is threatened by the arrival of evil. Only the fifth element can stop the evil from extinguishing life, as it tries to do every 5,000 years. She is assisted by a former elite commando turned cab driver, Corbin Dallas, who is in turn helped by Prince Arsenio clone Ruby Road. Unfortunately, evil is being assisted by Mr. Zorg, who seeks to profit from the chaos that evil will bring, and his alien mercenaries.
What's really funny about that is, you know, sometimes, not often, but sometimes, I like to cut and paste the IMDb plot synopsis without reading them, and I didn't realize that it had the Prince Arsenio clone in there.
Right, because I read them like Ron Burgundy, so whatever it is, I'm plowing through it, I don't give a shit.
Okay, so this is my selection, this is The Fifth Element. This is a film that is directed by Luc Besson, who did The Professional, which is a film that I really, really, really like. This movie was one that was actually Annelle's selection. A little peek behind the counter, because I didn't really like this when I first saw it and didn't have it that highly rated. I think I had like a two, I think I had like a two on the IMDb scale and was like, The Fifth Element. I saw that when it came out. It was just crazy. And I remember the girl in the orange jumpsuit and Bruce Willis, doing his Die Hard thing with the crazy outfit. It's kind of what I took from it, right? So flash forward about, 18 years later, and I watched this, and I had so much fun. I really, really enjoyed it a lot, and was kind of like, what the fuck was my younger self thinking? Which
Grumpy Eric?
Yeah, I was going to say, which I do often for people that that know me. So I really enjoyed it, but before I kind of gush about it, let's go with Sean first. What did you think of The Fifth Element, and what's your history with it?
My history with it is this. When it dropped in 1997, me and my best friend Chris, may he rest in peace, we went to go see this at like a 10:30 in the morning showing on Friday, on that Friday, because we couldn't wait. We wanted to see it because we seen the commercials, we seen the trailer, and, you know, we liked, you know, the sci-fi design. You know, we didn't know that, you know, all the people attached until we read the credits, until at the end of the movie, you know, when you had cats like, Jean Giraud and, Jean-Claude, Mezier, mm-hmm. you know, comic book cats overseas, you know, they did production design. And so, cause it had this really cool feel. I'm like, okay, this is not an American production. Yeah. It's a French film, essentially. It was a French film, but it was made for American audiences. It was made for the world, actually, but still, it still had, you know, American appeal. But you know, this isn't a standard American sci-fi action film. And I remember the first time me and Chris watched it, and you know, we both looked at each other like, do we enjoy this? I mean, like, you know, the designs were cool. The ships were cool. The characters were cool. You know, people are like leaking black stuff on their head. And like, Debo from Friday is the president of the universe. But, do we enjoy this? So later on that day at 5:00, we went to go see it again.
Oh my God.
Nice.
We went to go see it again. And then like, you know, and then we like, you know, looked at each other again. It's like, was Chris Tucker just really just playing Prince? For real? He was playing Prince, right? That's what he was trying to do, right? They tried to get Prince, didn't they? They probably did try to get Prince. And later on, realized, yes, they did try to get Prince, but they couldn't get Prince. So that's why Chris Tucker was acting a fool. And I was just like, wait a minute, is this, like, is this priest supposed to be Obi-Wan Kenobi? You know, I'm like, just like, there are all these questions, and like, we just kept asking more and more questions, and I think all those questions made us like it even more. So then, I still personally was unsure. So 2 days later, some of my other friends wanted to go see it. I was like, I'll go. And they paid for my ticket because I had already went twice. I was like, oh, free ticket? Bet. I was like, let's go. They hated it. And by that time, I was like, this is awesome. And I haven't even talked about Bruce Willis yet. You know, so, there's some issues now. Like, say, for instance, I watch it now. Yes, I still like the film. But now the critical side of me wonders, like, it's weird how, like, women are treated in this film. Either women are androgynous, because that's how Lilu is really portrayed. She's portrayed as androgynous. Other females really don't do much of anything in the film. Like, one is a speechless presidential aide, or they are a flight attendant, or they work for McDonald's, or they are, like, stripped of, like, all womanly quality, like Major Iceberg. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's weird. You know, that's really, really weird. But then, like, you take all that and be like, man, that's really jacked up. But, like, you know, but then they let Lilu come on and stop being passive when she does, like, some fighting. But besides that, like, the only thing that kind of counters that is Tiny Zeus Lister as President Lindbergh, which I remember the first time I saw that, I was just like, yo, that's Zeus. Mm-hmm. That's the dude from No Holds Barred. He is the president. I was like, Zeus is the president.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
As Zeus.
Yeah, I was like, this dude is the president. Like, this is crazy. And when I first saw that, I literally started clapping because I was just like, this is definitely not a Hollywood production because they would never allow this ever, ever. So I'm just like quietly clapping in the back, and people are like, what's wrong with him?
what is that, Zeus' brother?
Yeah, exactly. It's just weird. But no, like, the designs are cool. I like the designs. I love the car chase or the hover car chase and stuff. And, you know, just all that stuff, all of it, especially even Gary Oldman, who, you know, when he had, like, a piece of glass on his head.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just, there's so many cool things. Even I think, but the funniest thing, and then this is where I'll leave it, because I know it's my feelings about this film have been very, they haven't been the most cohesive, but I remember the most controversial thing at the time about this film was that this was supposed to be the quote unquote comeback for, what's his name from Beverly Hills 90210?
Oh, Luke Perry.
Luke Perry. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be his comeback because he had a cameo in the beginning of the film. And I remember, like, Entertainment Tonight and all those tabloid shows at the time talking about that constantly. And I was like, he's only going to be in the film for like 2 minutes, y'all.
Well, he's like fourth or fifth build too.
Yeah, which is crazy. Which is absolutely crazy because his role was not that damn important.
Yeah, because I remember seeing the, you know, watching it this time, I'm like, God, I don't remember much of this. You know, I there was stretches where I didn't remember it at all.
Right.
And you know, a lot of movies have passed in those 15 or 17 years or whatever it was. And I see that prologue, I see the credit sequence, and then I see the prologue, and I'm like, what the hell? Luke Perry is in this? I don't remember that at all. And I was like, oh, there he is, like, being just 90210 Luke Perry. Like, he's not really being much of a character, and he's just cowering the whole time.
But he's an artiste.
Yeah, and I had that in the back of my mind that he was so highly billed. So I'm like, okay, well, he must come back and do something, or there must be some allusion to him, or he must be important some way. Hell no, he's not important. He's just a guy that's in there at the beginning, and that's it. I'm like, well, that's dumb. Cruiser, what did you think of the movie? Is this a first time watch for you?
I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
I saw that familiar, this was on Netflix and like a while ago. Like, and by a while, I literally mean like maybe a month ago.
Long time ago.
Yeah. Someone was like, you need to watch Fifth Element. And that someone has given me bad options before for movies.
Katie?
And so, no, it was not Katie. She would never recommend this movie. Are you serious?
That's true.
And I was like, okay, cool. Yeah, I'll watch this movie that you told me was so amazing. And I mean, speaking of Luke Perry, where I'm laying in bed watching this and Brad's already, you know, got his sleepy breath on. So he's sleeping and, I see Luke Perry and I'm like, this movie's gonna fucking suck. What is going on? Like, we're in a pyramid and we got like mopesy face over there, like with his fake mustache. So fair enough. I fell asleep before any of the cool shit happened. And then I was like, it's that, you know, like you go to Netflix and it's like, recently watched. Do you want to continue watching this? I'm like, nap. This looks stupid. So then you picked it and I'm like, oh God, I gotta go to this dumb movie. But once you get past the Luke Perry part and my dad walks in,
yeah, Bruce Willis,
shit gets real. I was like, okay, this is way better. And so I actually really enjoyed it. It was a bunch of colors and a bunch of action and a bunch of fun alien shit. and it was fast paced and it was slow enough in some points to where that when the action came back, it was legit. You know, and it was really pretty a lot of the time, like the opera part, you know, like the angles and what they were doing with that. And, so yeah, I actually, you know, and I thought, yeah, Luke Perry was going to come back for like, you know, a last night of crusade thing or something when they go back to the pyramids, but sure enough, he didn't show up and ruin anything for me. So I like that. But yeah, I am really glad that you made me, cause I would have never watched it again.
Mm-hmm.
If you wouldn't have picked it, I would have been like, nah, I'm not going to deal with this. So I'm actually really glad you picked it cause I enjoyed it a lot.
Oh, good. Yeah. I was, you know, I just, like I said in my notes, like I don't remember that prologue at all. And watching it this time, I was like, oh, I really like that because I was expecting it just to be straight into the sci-fi and I just had this memory and it's faulty now that I have watched it again, but I had this memory of this movie being so cute about how design heavy it was. And I just felt that it was just putting on this pretense at one time. Like, sure. Oh, look how precious we are. And look how over designed this is. And so when it actually opened in the pyramids, I was like, wait a minute, what? And then it cuts to there. I'm kind of like, oh, okay. Yeah. I might actually like this. And yeah. We're about a third of the way through and I'm like, holy shit. Like I am all the way in.
Right.
I did write on there. I put Debo/Zeus as president. That's interesting. That's not Hollywood to go along with what Sean had said earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was like, what the fuck is Tiny Lister doing up there?
Like, yeah, that's the furthest thing from Hollywood.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, well, maybe he'll have like one role. No, he has a pretty chunky role in there. Like, he's got a lot to do.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, that's it. That's really interesting. And then they have, you know, Mila Jovovich, who apparently is our favorite actress in the world. Like, we get in these little stretches where in January and February with our movies we missed, it was Tilda Swinton all the time. And now with the Alien movies, it's Mila Jovovich.
Mila is a lot easier to look at, if we're being honest.
Well, they call her perfect about 5,000 times in the movie, so.
I wouldn't go that far. You can see her roots, but what else?
You can't see it. You can see that. Yeah, when they design it, you make part of her hair blonde and part of it red and part of it roots. So.
I guess. That's totally, totally 1997, like when I was wearing pleather pants and putting butterfly clips in my hair. So I get it.
That sounds right.
One of my favorite things about watching futuristic films from a long time ago is what they think the future is going to look like. Like some of the beginning scene in this reminded me of like the old school Total Recall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where like, mm-hmm. you're like, oh yeah. But cause like the computer's talking to him, which happens now in the future, but it's like Siri's voice and it's not like quit smoking, you know, cause like, but those are just fun little like details that they wouldn't think of. And so I'm like, that's not how it works now, silly people. But those are just like really fun things that I really like to watch when I see, you know, old movies that try to futurize stuff. I really like looking into what they think that it's going to be like.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I like that as well because you can, it's like watching, you know, Back to the Future and you see what Back to the Future 2, I guess.
Right.
And you're like a little tiny pill and it turns into a pizza. Holy shit. I want that.
Right. Hydrate level 4. Legit.
You know, that sort of thing. So I really like that. I do, you know, one of the things that since Anel picked this, she watched it with me, and one of the things that she pointed out and, you know, made sure to say that was a good point that she made and that I should probably mention it was that, was that she, really appreciated how the film could be serious and it felt right and it could be silly and it felt like it fit and it could go back and forth. And everything felt like it had the right sort of tone for that scene.
Yeah.
You know, like when Lilu is beating the shit out of the aliens, it's a little silly and it, you know, she's like smacking their face back and forth or whatever. But then later it's very serious and all of it, you know, you're on the roller coaster ride and you're like, okay, yeah, I'm just with it. It's not like, ah, what the hell? Why is this so silly and stupid right here? You know?
Right.
And I don't know what that is. Like, it's just that, you know, it's just that sort of unknowable thing, I think, sometimes where it just works. And I don't know that I can put my finger on something in particular that Luc Besson is doing that, that makes it work. It just ends up working.
I think he gives you little bits and pieces of it, like, from the beginning and then works it in. Like, there are parts that are a little bit silly and then a little bit serious, and then you go, like, a little bit more silly and a little bit more serious. So, like, by the time there's, like, a super silly scene, you're like, oh, I've already seen that. I get it. I know what's going on.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I guess that makes sense. What did, you know, one of the things that annoyed me is, and I don't know why I let this bother me, but why the hell was the cigarettes reversed? Like, it seemed like it was all filter and just a tiny bit of cigarette. Do you notice that? Like,
he's trying to quit.
But the part that they're lighting was so small, and I was like, is this some sort of futuristic thing, or what the hell is this? And that was the thing where it just was like, I don't understand the art choice on this.
Oh, it's a little bit of a futuristic thing, and another thing is it's just to mess with you.
I guess so.
Yeah. You know who's going to hate this? Fucking Eric Williams. Let's throw this in there.
Yeah, we'll show that fucking guy.
Yeah. Fuck that guy.
Sean, what did you make of, what did you make, since you mentioned him, of Chris Tucker in this movie?
Chris Tucker, the one thing I remember most is him screaming,
yes,
consecutively when the bomb went off.
Oh, when they're at, yes, the table, yeah.
And he's under the table screaming while they were moving. And I remember the first time I saw that back in 97, laughing uncontrollably. You know, yeah, 21 years old. I am laughing uncontrollably listening to him scream. Watching it now, like, I chuckled and I'm like, okay, man, you can shut the fuck up now, dude. Shut the fuck up now, dude. I'm like, man, I was like, my demeanor has changed over 18. But I mean, I still like the character, because I swear, to me, it just really feels like they tried to get Prince to play that role, and Prince was just like, look, man, even I won't go that far. And then they got Chris Tucker, who was massively popular at the time. And they're like, Chris, can you do this? He was like, oh yeah, sure. Oh, I'll act like an anime character. Let's go.
Yeah. He was like, how many zeros are on my check? Oh, hell yeah. I'll do that.
Yeah. So he's like, so let's roll. And so like, I didn't have a problem. I didn't have a problem with it at all. I didn't have a problem with this character at all. To me, I guess the thing that the weird thing for me was that sometimes I felt like, and I don't mean to be disrespectful and call the character Obi-Wan Kenobi, but that's just what it really comes off as.
Mm.
The priest.
With Ian Holm, yeah, from Alien.
Yeah, with Ian Holm, it was just weird because I didn't really know how much of a purpose he actually, I mean, I know the purpose that he served, but is the character necessary?
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, cause like it was, you know, Ian Holm and his sidekick, you know, his priest in training. And I'm like, did you need both of them? You know what I mean? Did you need both of them? You could have went with one or two, but at the same time, like they serve some purpose for the story. I'm still trying to figure out as to what, besides being like this mentor or this, you know, tool that understands what, you know, Lilu does and everything. But to a point, I'm just like, are you really necessary? Couldn't we get rid of you? You know what I mean? Maybe that's just my watching, like, so many movies, like, over, like, you know, the last X amount of years, and the way Hollywood would do films. Someone would have to die to advance the story.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that's what a lot of Hollywood films do nowadays. It's rare when they just keep the group together. You have to kill someone to advance the story and to advance motives and whatnot. So it is kind of surprising to see those types of characters live.
You know what's funny is the character of David, the understudy of the priest, I could have sworn that they called him David Dunn, his character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at IMDb, he's listed as just being named David. And what I was going to say is David Dunn, that's the character that Bruce Willis plays in Unbreakable. That's what his character's name
really?
Is. And I was like, oh, that's clever. And then I looked on here and I was like, oh, fuck me. It just says David. Well, whatever. Maybe I just heard that and it wasn't a real thing.
So you just projected what you wanted to hear?
I guess. I was just trying to have this synergy.
Yeah, I think the priest's real name was Samuel L. Jackson.
They call him Mr. Glass in The Fifth Element. So
right?
One of the things that I wanted to mention, though, was with the Chris Tucker character was I hated it when I first saw it. I just thought it was the most And this is 97, so this is not Grumpy Eric yet. This is like high school junior, right? This is a long ways away from me being grumpy, but I didn't like him at all, and I thought it was so irritating. And one of the things I think that really influenced me this time was about halfway through the film, Anna rolled in and started watching it. And she's watching it during this hotel sequence, and things are blowing up everywhere. And, you know, Bruce Willis is being diehard Bruce Willis, and Chris Tucker is screaming, like Sean mentioned, and Anna thought that was the funniest fucking thing she's ever heard. She, you know, and she's almost seven, and she just laughed and laughed and laughed. And anytime he said anything throughout the rest of the film, she thought that was the funniest thing she'd ever heard. And so I don't know if it was like her laughing and Anel sitting with her and kind of giggling also, if that just sort of rubbed off on me, but I was like, oh, I understand. Like, I get it now. I know why this character's here. Like, it's all right. It's okay. Like, I can take this as a silly character and have fun with it and not have to have everything be so serious. But I enjoyed the character very much more than I did at one point.
All right.
So there you go. Let's talk a little bit about Zorg. Again, Sean mentioned him, but Gary Oldman, who had worked with Luc Besson earlier on The Professional, and he does that famous, call everyone or get everyone or something like that, or he has a line like that. But anyway, he plays a super crazy police officer, FBI agent sort of guy in that movie, and he's very over the top at points. And so that's a very specific performance. And in here, he's playing this guy who's got this very futuristic look. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that looks cool. And I expect him to have this posh English accent when he starts talking because of the way that his hair is all crazy. And he comes off with this, hey, buddy,
yeah,
kind of thing. And I'm like, what? I don't remember that at all. Like, what is this? And he's like, how y'all doing? Kind of a thing. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't know if I like this. Like, that's such an interesting choice. Like, I can't believe that this is allowed. Like, again, that this choice is being allowed. And I don't, and still at this point, I don't know that I necessarily like it, but I think that it's interesting. And I'm glad that it's in there just because it kind of makes me think, you know, it makes me think about performance more than I would normally. Like, I think the standard thing is to have someone just be very austere and sort of posh about it.
I can see that. And I can understand where you're coming from with that. But I'm kind of glad he used the voice that he used for this film, because he really comes off like the ultimate comic book villain in this movie.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
And I think for me, that's what made the character worth watching. If he was super smooth and talked, you know, very, delicately and, you know, in such a tone, like akin to a Mark Strong, or a Idris Elba, if he had talked in that type of tone, I think it would have made it a little bit too serious. Mm-hmm. His character would have been too serious for a film where you're talking to this alien life force that makes people freak out so bad that black stuff leaks from their heads.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a good point.
You know, so I think I think that Gary Oldman's character has to act that way in order for all of this to play out.
Bit of silly that the film needs aside from some of the fight sequences and aside from Chris Tucker. It's like a little bit different in terms of silly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could see that. I don't know though. I mean, this was a real surprise. I mean, even though I picked it, it was a thing where I was really sort of like, slapping myself on the back, like, oh yeah, like I'm really enjoying this. I'm really feeling good about this pick. And you know, I'm watching it going, God, I wish Luc Besson would make another sci-fi film, you know, like this, something like this. I mean, he did Taken 2, not too long ago. Or did he just write that? I think he just might have wrote that.
No, I think he wrote Taken 2 because, I think Olivier Megaton.
Yeah, you're
directed
right.
Yep. Taken 2 because Olivier Megaton directed Transporter 3 as well. So yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, Luc Besson is La Femme Nikita, Leon the Professional, The Fifth Element. Outside of that, I'm pretty unfamiliar, but he's made, you know, Extraordinary Adventures of Adele Blonsec, which is a comic deal. Arthur, I don't know what Arthur and the Invisibles is. I think that might be
it's a kids animated movie. Film.
He made The Lady, The Family, and last year's Lucy, which got really poor reviews, but I believe made quite a bit of money.
Oh, it made a gang of cash. It made a gang of cash because, you know, people want to see ladies kicking ass. Mm. And, you know, story be damned.
Well, and who do you go to if you want to see ladies kicking ass? Luc Besson.
Yeah.
Right?
Because he knows how to do it. You know, he knows how to do it. He gets the most out of his actors, regardless of the story. Speaking of getting the most out of your actors, or getting the most out of a project, like this man, like Luc Besson started writing this script when he was 16 years old.
I read that.
And like, you know, and by the time this movie actually became a thing and it was in a theater, he was 38. But what's even more crazier is that, when they were trying to get the film in production, like back in, like the early 90s, Luc Besson talked with Bruce Willis and Mel Gibson for the lead role, supposedly. And Willis was interested in doing it, but he was scared because Hudson Hawk and Billy Bathgate both tanked.
Right.
And, I don't know if Hudson Hawk tanked as much as it was critically panned, but Billy Bathgate, yeah, that did not do well.
I forget about that era of Bruce Willis sometimes.
You know, who could forget such classics as Bonfire of the Vanities? sorry. If Bruce Willis is listening to this, he's probably like gritting his teeth.
Well,
right
he's
now.
Supposed to be a real jerk off in real life, so.
My God, that son of a bitch. I swear they're talking out of boy. Bam.
Oh my God.
But like, you know, Mel Gibson turned it down, but Bruce Willis like finally said, yeah, he's like, yeah, I'll take it. So, but there's, you know, Besson and his people impressed like a lot of, you know, film companies with their designs, but they just couldn't find anybody to take on the film's budget of almost $100 million in like 92. So like production stopped. And like they just disbanded the team. And then Besson went on to do, The Professional. Mm-hmm. And he continued to rework the script for Fifth Element. And he chopped it up a little bit. And that helped get the budget to around $90 million. And then he found a studio, in Colombia because he had a partnership with Colombia for Leon, The Professional. So it all started to work out. So, you know, he got lucky. So then he talked with Bruce Willis again and they came to an agreement. Bruce Willis and I think Luc Besson came to an agreement to do the movie because like, the studio wanted to go with a less expensive actor because they only had a $90 million budget. But Besson was like, I want Bruce Willis. And supposedly Willis was like, if I like the film, we can always come to an arrangement. So that's how all that worked out.
Interesting. I like that. What do we think of Mila Jovovich playing her little, like she's got the foreign language stuff going on at the beginning, which is a little beep boop bop boop, you know, and a little cutesy for a while. And I'm like, just learn the English already, please. And then once she did, I was like, all right, now I'm good. Yeah. It was just enough to where I was like, ah, shit, I'm getting tired of this. Getting tired of not knowing what's going on, you know? And then it's just like a lot of things in this movie. It gets to that line of I'm getting frustrated with hearing something that I have no idea what's being said. And then Besson knows, okay, now she needs to learn English now.
Yes.
Because it'll have more impact at the end if she can actually
have a translator.
Yeah. If people know what she's saying. So what did we think of her in general, Cruz? What did you think of her? Did you like that Mila Jovovich was this sort of perfect being and was this ass kicker and all that sort of stuff? Like, did you believe her in those roles?
Yeah. Wasn't like, oh my God, it'd be super cool to be the Fifth Element or anything, because it seems like a shit ton of work.
Because you could have had Elizabeth Berkley, who auditioned for the role.
Oh, and but after really Showgirls, that didn't happen.
Yeah, after Showgirls, they decided not to hire her.
She learns English and then starts singing, I'm so excited.
I'm so scared.
Yeah, yeah. She, I mean, I think that the acting, I mean, don't get me wrong, Saved by the Bell, super great, but the acting between the two is on entirely different levels.
Yeah.
And I thought that she was cute and she, like you, I mean, like kind of this whole movie, she tightroped that line between adorable and super serious and pouty. I mean, like she, I mean, just like every character and every scene in here, she did a good job of being on all sides of that. And I thought that she did a good job.
Good.
I don't know.
Sean, what did you think of her?
Oh, I thought she was great. I do think like the best part of the movie for her character is when she gets to the point where she states, what's the use of saving a life when you see what you do with it?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's like the, for me, that's the best part of her character. Yeah. You know, she can do all the kick ass stuff. She can do the fighting and all that. And she has like cute little jokes and she learns all the languages and all that. That's cool. That's great. But I think like that moment in the film, that's when she's at her best. And so, I was good with her character. But for a good period of time, the way she really comes off is very androgynous early in the film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very, very early in the film, she comes off as massively androgynous. And maybe, you know, visually it was supposed to be that way. But, I think her role in the film is very good.
Okay. One of the things that I thought was interesting as well, going back to Gary Oldman, was that according to IMDb trivia, that he played Zorg as a cross between presidential candidate Ross Perot and Bugs Bunny. is what he was trying to do. I think that's really
what?
Cool. Yeah, that's why he was talking the way that he was talking. So my final note before we move on was I just put that, god damn, that was a lot of fun. Like I just had a lot of fun watching it. You know, it was a lot of times we pick films and they're real serious and I especially am like, oh, what does it all mean? What are they trying to say? And all this. And this one is just, it's a lot of fun and I had a good time watching it and I'm glad that I picked it.
Yeah. So. Agreed.
Okay. Well, let's move on to our last film. Oh, I should say that Annelle picked it. I should reiterate that she was the one who selected that movie, not me. As she's pointing at me. Okay. So let's move on to our last film. It is Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace.
To the prophecy of the one who will bring balance to the Force. You believe it's this boy?
He can see things before they happen.
He can help you.
The Force is unusually strong with him.
He was meant to help you.
Anakin! Tell him to take off!
Will I ever see you again?
What does your heart tell you?
Are you sure about this? Trusting our fate to a boy we hardly know?
Anakin Skywalker, meet Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I sense much fear in you.
The boy is dangerous. They all sense it. Why can't you?
Fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering.
The The evil Trade Federation, led by Newt Gunray, is planning to take over the peaceful world of Naboo. Jedi Knights, Qui-Gon Jinn, and Obi-Wan Kenobi are sent to confront the leaders, but not everything goes to plan. The two Jedi escape, and along with their new Gungan friend, Jar Jar Binks, head to Naboo to warn Queen Amidala, but droids have already started to capture Naboo, and the Queen is not safe there. Eventually, they land on Tatooine, where they become friends with a young boy known as Anakin Skywalker. Qui-Gon is curious about the boy and sees a bright future for him. The group must now find a way of getting to Coruscant and to finally solve this trade dispute, but there is something else hiding in the shadows. Are the Sith really extinct? Question mark. Is the Queen really who she says she is? And what's so special about this young boy, besides his bowler haircut?
Which is sweet in the 90s, because I had that in my senior picture.
Oh my god, I want... Woo! To see that, please.
Oh, that's definitely going to be something that is visible in a little, probably a slideshow at the wedding reception, so.
Yeah!
I would imagine. I got, my senior picture's got the bowler haircut. That's got to be something that people can laugh about. You know?
Yes. Yeah. There shall be chuckles.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you might like, I like how both of you so eagerly agree. Yeah, that's funny. Let's see that, yeah.
That's definitely something.
You know, the mo cut, man. The mo cut.
The mo cut.
The mocha.
Okay, so Sean, this is your pick. Tell me about you in episode one.
Me in episode one, I think it was a thing like we're at a time where, you know, the internet is starting to become a very big influence in the hype and promotion of film. From fan sites to like movie sites at the time, like Cinescape or Ain't It Cool News or Corona's Coming Attractions. Yeah, see, I'm going back, y'all. I'm going back. I'm going back. Like, you know, and all these types of sites talking about, you know, talking about movies and giving you like, you know, movie stills and like behind the scenes set pictures and stuff like that. We're at the cusp of before fandom and geekdom goes fucking overboard full tilt. But, you know, we were also at a time where in 1997, yeah, it was 97, in 1999, we were at a time where, like, the hype for Star Wars Episode One had been going on for a while. And I mean, for like over a year. And it was so, the hype for this film was so well planned. You know, from the images to the posters, to the teasers, like they had like one teaser for this film before they put out the main trailer, and they did it in such a way they were like, man, we could save Hollywood. This is what we're going to do. Yeah. You know, that film called Meet Joe Black is really bad. You know what? We can save this. Hey, man. Hey, go put that Star Wars teaser in front of Meet Joe Black, and people paid money.
People paid money
to see the trailer because, you know, you couldn't really just jack it off the internet like you can nowadays. To see a trailer, they paid money to boost Meet Joe Black's box office score. And not only that, 20th Century Fox was like, well, man, we should do that too. Yo, we got a movie called Wing Commander coming out. Yo, put that Star Wars trailer in front of it. And I remember a friend of mine wanted to see Wing Commander, and I was like, look, I love the video game Wing Commander. I even loved like the later versions where they had like the little short movies that were like in a box that was like 320 by 240 with Mark Hamill in it. That was cool. I was like, but I know this Wing Commander movie is going to be pure ass.
Oh my god. Okay?
It's going to be pure ass, and it has a lot of actors in it that I like, but I can look at, just looking at the trailer alone, I was like, in the commercials alone, I'm like, yeah, this is going to suck, y'all. But he was like, yo, he's like, I'll take you. He's like, plus you see the Star Wars trailer at the movie theater. I was like, oh, okay, that's cool, whatever. And so I go and I see the trailer. I'm like, huh. I was like, you know, this is really cool. Like I said, I've seen images and in like, you know, magazines and teasers, you know, teasing like images of Darth Maul and all this other stuff. But to see it all in motion, I'm like, oh, this is really interesting because it didn't look like Star Wars.
Right. Yeah, which is part of my
which I think freaked people the fuck out because the only thing that looked like Star Wars were the lightsabers and the Jedi. Besides that, you know, everything else is really new. Nothing is really dirty. Whereas like in the original trilogy, things are dirty.
People, you know, look like they lived there.
Yes, whereas in the prequels, with the exception of Tatooine, everything else is clean.
Polished.
And so I think that really freaked people out. And I just remember, you know, even like, you know, all like I said, all these events just leading up to the premiere of the movie. Like, there was even an event months before the movie dropped where, like, stores were, like, staying open late or opening at midnight to sell the Episode One toys.
Mm-hmm.
Me and my friends hung out at, like, a Toys R Us just to, like, see the chaos and, like, maybe get, like, a Mace Windu figure. Yeah, that was another thing, too. Like, Samuel Jackson was going to be a Jedi. He's going to be in a movie. You know, he was like, I want a lightsaber that says bad motherfucker on it. And I was just like,
that's
that dude. I was like, I'm going to get a black Jedi for real? You know, I was like, yeah, bet. I'm going. But still, I know it's taking me a long time to get across the street.
It's a little bit of a bait and switch with Mace Windu and then you have Jar Jar.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
Yeah. But all in all, I just remember watching this in the movie theater when it came out, like all excited. And when it was done, looking at my friend Chris looking at me and we said, did we like this? Like, I mean, it's like, because the thing is, like, we walked out with like a lot of questions, which is great. We walked out with a lot of questions. So we saw it again. And we looked at each other again. It's like, did we really like this? Did we? What did we like and what we did we not like? So we started like talking about it a little bit more. And then, you know, luckily enough, his sister started to work at a movie theater. So we got to see it two more times for free.
Mm.
Nice.
To which we realized that, like with the prequels, all the prequels as a whole, each film has something of value. But these three films are more spectacles and events than films themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And like they suffer from inconsistent story structure. And you know, I know people give Lucas so much shit for his directing skills, but you know what? Let's keep it 100. Like, he didn't have to make these movies, especially episode one. He didn't have to do it. He just said, you know, look, I'm rich. Fuck y'all. I don't have to do this. Cause he said many times, he's like, look, I have enough money. He said that on record. How many rich people do you know that say shit like that? Yeah. I have enough money and I don't need more money. How many rich folks say that? They don't. So the fact that he made episode one, I was like, yo, man, just do you. Yeah, I don't care much for Jake Lloyd. Yeah, some of the dialogue in this film is awful. But visually, it was really cool. Mm-hmm. I always thought it was really cool. And like, you know, and like, yeah, I got to see how C-3PO and R2-D2 met. Yeah, I thought the pod race ran a little long. But it all made up for it when Darth Maul fought Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon. That was like the best part of the movie. I was like, man, just give me that part like 15 times and I'm good. Or better yet, when they're on Tatooine and like, you know, Darth Maul was like, yo, I just came here to scout for a second. Oh, hold on. Let me whip some ass real quick. And he just jumps off his skiff and just like starts fighting. And the fact, this is also the first time I get to see Liam Neeson pre-Taken era.
Yeah.
Right.
Cause I was like, oh man, like Liam Neeson can't scrap. And then my homie Chris was like, man, yo, he was in Rob Roy. I was like, oh, that's right. I was like, Liam Neeson is that dude. So like seeing him as Qui-Gon scrapping a little bit and then like, you know, and then he bites the bullet, but this is still pre-Taken Liam Neeson. So I get to see that. But, I think, and I know Jake Lloyd is like a bitter young man right now. I think he's in his 20s, early 30s. He's a very bitter dude, but, I can't put all the blame on him. Like I said before, I think George gets way too much flack for these films. Like I said, they do have their problems. I'm like, yo, you're talking about trade routes? You're talking about trade federation? Like, you know,
bureaucratic. Episode one, the bureaucrats.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you're talking about stuff like that, and it's weird. It's really, really just weird. Like, you know, that's
weird,
not exciting.
By weird, do you mean boring?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yes. You know, and it's weird. Like, you know, they're really trying to talk about the democratic process, mm-hmm. and I get it, but still, just like, no.
All right, yeah. Cruz, why don't you go ahead and why don't you tell me about you in this movie? Did you see?
Well,
here's the question. I guess. you know, we haven't really delved too deeply into you and the sort of sci-fi franchises. Like, if people haven't already heard Sean and I talk about sci-fi, like we did Star Trek First Contact. You know, we talked about being Star Trek kids growing up. So, Cruz, this is kind of the first that we've delved into those two huge franchises with you. So what did you think of, like, what's your sort of deal with Star Wars in general, I guess, before episode one?
What's your deal, Cruz?
You know what I think of is I always wonder, like, how many new listeners we get, and they're always like, what the fuck are you calling her Cruz for when her name is Rachel Fleck? But anyway,
I can just change it back.
Yeah.
I've been pondering. No.
Rachel Cruz.
Yeah. When I was little, I still am. Like, I'm always just kind of like wherever the fuck I want to be in my head. But my parents were actually huge Star Wars and Star Trek nerds. So, but, you know, among other things, like being able to take shots and listen to awesome music, they taught me many things. And that was one of them. And I remember like wandering in and out and staring at shit while they were watching like the Star Trek whale movie. Like, oh, I remember that one.
Yeah. Episode the fourth one. Yeah, sure.
Yep. Yep. And they're like, shut up. We're watching this. You know, like that was kind of, you know, but then I actually sat down and watched it with them later. And they were big into Star Wars also. The original good ones. And so
I like the little note.
I remember watching that, like they would like sit us down and be like, do you want to be cool later? And I'll be like, well, yeah. And they're like, okay, we'll watch these movies. I'd be like, okay. And they're like, okay, this one's called this. This is Field of Dreams. This is Hunt for Red October. Like, what else do you need to know? I'm like, I don't know. So here's Blazing Saddles. Go ahead and watch that a few times. But my mom drugged me to this movie in 1999. She's like, fucking new Star Wars is coming out. Get your pants on. We're going to the theater.
And I was like fine. What, 14, 15?
99? I can't do math.
When did you graduate?
2002.
Okay, so you're like 14, probably.
Okay. Yeah, that seems right.
Yeah.
And she was like, okay, we're going to go see Star Wars. I think little mini me was there. I don't really, she's always in and out of, you know, childhood memories. And like, I remember sitting down and like, we're watching this Star Wars and I just think it's pretty and great. And I mean, I'm obviously not following the plot very well because like, what is happening? And Jar Jar Binks goes on and my mom looks at me and I don't think she said the F word, but she's like, what is this? Like, unhappy. I just remember her, like, disgusted face at what was going on during that part of the movie. And, like, we would, of course, you know, you're a little kid and you're like, Mom, on the way home, Misa, Misa. And she's like, stop
it.
Oh,
no.
Stop. Like, she's just angry. She's not having it. Just, So, that was, you know, my first experience with this. And I thought Jar Jar Binks was a pile of crap too. So, I mean, I was just doing it to make her mad, but, I don't think I'm 100% sure she's never watched, any of the other ones.
Oh, two or three
or this one. Like she was just really, because she was like, you know, when Star Wars came out, you know, like she was
sure. Like right at the beginning,
right in the thick of things. So that's like her bread and butter. So I think she's a little more than disappointed. This might be like the Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull to her. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. You're like, oh no.
Right. Wow. What are you doing?
That's funny.
But I, you know, I have obviously some problems with this, but I kind of watch it because I like the whole prequel idea. I like the whole backstory idea. And, it's just kind of, I mean, I get what he was trying to do and I give him props for that and go along with most of this just for on premise alone. Mm-hmm. But obviously some parts they could just completely cut out because I don't ever want to hear that voice ever again. So.
Right. Okay. So this movie for me, this was the first movie that I ever pirated.
Congratulations.
This is a movie where I was like, oh hell, I can get on Napster and get a movie. Or maybe it was LimeWire or something.
Seven hours later.
Yeah, no shit. It was, I'm going to start downloading this now. And in the morning, I'm going to watch this shit, you know, with my dial up at my college dorm. So I was like, okay, well, that's exactly what I'm going to do. And so I went over and our mutual acquaintance, Cruz, Mr. Seabrass and I.
Oh,
he, not the other one, he and I, he was in town for something for the school, for the paper for North Platte.
Sure.
And so he was in town. It must have been like state wrestling or something. And so I was like, hey, I got this DVD burned. We should watch this. And he's like, what is it?
You're
like,
such a hard ass.
And he's like, it's Star Wars. And he's like, what? And so we're like, yeah, let's watch it. And I remember watching it and, you know, we got pizza and it was a hotel room and it was still on, of course, on the, you know, the tube TV and it looked like shit. And I'm watching it and I'm like, well, when's all the good shit going to happen? Like, right. This thing is boring as hell. Like, what's going on? And then Anakin shows up and I'm like, all right, all right. Well, he's not very good. Okay. all right. And then they do the midichlorians and I'm like, wait a minute. What?
Yeah, man. I'm like, let's go ahead and explain the force, y'all. What?
And I'm like, whoa, why are they doing that? And you know, by that time you have Jar Jar and I'm like, ooh, man, this is like some blackface, like Caribbean stuff. Like, this is not good. Like, this is not cool. And I'm like, what is going on? And I'm kind of like, no, I'm enjoying it. Like, talking myself.
Yeah, no,
into
this
it,
is
you know?
Great.
Like,
yeah.
This is all right. There's just a couple of things that are weird. Like, I don't know though. Darth Maul, he looks pretty cool. So I'm just waiting for that. I'm waiting for that shit that I saw in the trailer, right? That I did not go to the movies to see, but I get to the end and I see the Darth Maul stuff and I'm like, oh hell yes. Like, I love that. Right. And him getting cut in half and Qui-Gon getting his and he's got, of course, the dual lightsaber thing. And I thought that was the best. The rest of the movie I thought was not good at all. And I just didn't care at all about any of it. And so watching it this time, I thought it was still boring. I thought Jake Lloyd was still not good. And I'm watching it and it's one of those things where he's so not good that I feel bad for him. And I'm like, I don't know if it's the dialogue. I don't know if it's the way that he's being directed. I don't know if he just can't do it, but I'm feeling bad for the way that this is going right now. Like, there's a sequence where it's him and Jar Jar and I don't remember the character's name, but it's the blue flying guy that's the scrap heap owner.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Watto.
Yes, Watto. Thank you. And so it's those guys all together, and I'm like, oh, my God. Like, can I just skip all of this? Like, this is not – these are not the voices, and these are not the performances that I'm wanting to hear right now. So I found that difficult. I thought it was a really strange choice to make the cast mostly – celebrities, like mostly people that are recognizable. Because that's what I thought was so great for me about Star Wars is I didn't know anybody. I mean, I know Alec Guinness was a famous actor at the time, but I didn't know him.
Right.
And so I watched it and was like, all of these people or none of these people could die. And I wouldn't know because I don't know who any of them are.
Right.
And I'm watching it going, oh, Ewan McGregor. Oh, he's Obi-Wan. Okay. Well, he's in episode 4, so he's not going to die. Qui-Gon, well, I've never heard of him, so he's probably going to get it.
Right.
You know? And I'm like, oh, there's Natalie Portman. Okay, well, she's going to be fine.
Right.
You know, and it's like, it's not like I was, at the time, some kind of big, doing all of the research or something. I was just like, oh, well, I recognize her. She's been in Beautiful Girls. She's been in a few things that I've seen. She's been in Leon the Professional. And so it was her and Keira Knightley, I guess, as playing the opposite right. roles or whatever, but, and so I just was kind of like, okay, well, that kind of takes it away a little bit. Like, I know that that's not going to happen. And I just thought it was, it's the thing where it's CGI. And so everything at this point is a little light. Like, everyone's a little light that's CGI.
Well, not only that though, but this is also like really this is when George Lucas begins to take that super step into like using CGI for like, you know, more CGI for special effects, but also more digital editing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and all types, it really just starts to become very, very pro digital. you know, in this film. Now that's not for everything, because there were still like a lot of props used during the, like the beginning of the pod race. Mm-hmm. Because I remember they're like watching the behind the scenes on that, how like, there was a massive storm that damaged a lot of that stuff. And so they had to, you know, they had to find a workaround. Again, they worked it out, but still it was a mess. But still this is the beginning of the digital era for Lucasfilm heavily, because especially after all the changes for the special editions, he's like, well, we did this at this level for the special edition, and now technology is getting even better, so we're going to take it even higher. And then when the next film comes, we'll take it even higher. And next film comes, we take it even higher. Once again, I still say Lucas gets too much grief, because I don't think, because he had a, you know, he had a different batch of people with him. Like, you know, like Kathleen Kennedy is trying to keep Lucasfilm together and running. So she's doing her job. She's like, look, you're just supposed, so, supposed to go make Star Wars. I got to hold down the ship. That's fine. So I'll put that on Kathleen Kennedy. Who's the producer? Mm-hmm. The producer is Rick McCallum. And everything that George did, Rick was like, man, George, that's awesome. Man, that's great.
Keep
that's
doing really it, George. Keep idea. Going.
Yeah, like, and then seriously, like, and I think, you know, that's his personal opinion, but I think that was part of the problem. Whereas in the past, you know, when he created, you know, in the making of Star Wars, in the making of Empire Strikes Back, those two films, like, you know, Empire, he had someone else directed. He had Irwin, the late Irwin Kershaw directed.
Yes.
But the thing is that, but there's still people like Gary Kurtz and Lawrence Kasdan and, you know, and all these other, and all these other cats weighing in saying, yo, George, that's a good idea. Yo, George, you might want to consider this. You might want to take a look at that. You know, but there are people actually talking to him instead of just being yes men, mm-hmm. yes women.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I think that was a really big difference, because the thing is, still, it's George Lucas. George can do whatever the fuck he wants to do. He's rich. And right. he didn't have to make these movies, but I think if you have a different think tank, I think you get a different film.
Well, Sean, let me ask you this. You know who is the modern George Lucas? In the last movies that he's made.
Please don't say Zack Snyder.
I think
No. It's Peter Jackson.
Yeah.
He makes those first three Lord of the Rings and they're like, holy shit, I hope this goes well because I don't know and I don't know you and you're not a famous guy. You've done some things that shows that you know what you're doing, but you haven't made a huge movie yet. And then the Lord of the Rings movies explode and he's got all the principal for all three. And he's just cleaning them all up. And then he says, you know what? I'm going to do The Hobbit too. And they're like, oh, hell yeah. Do whatever you want.
Right.
You know, when it finally comes back to him after Del Toro passes halfway through or whatever. And then it comes to those last three movies. And, you know, I would have one point in my life said that the Lord of the Rings movies were my favorite movies. I haven't seen the last Hobbit movie because I just don't have any interest in it.
Yeah.
You know, it's that same sort of thing.
Well, it's a thing of like when you're dealing with the Hobbit film, it's like, did you really need three films for something that probably been done in maybe two?
Yeah, maybe two. Yeah.
20 minutes.
Cruise. Always the contrary, and I like it. That's why we have a show. Who did you think I was going to say, Cruiser?
I thought you were going to say James Cameron.
Oh, well, I could see that. That's definitely how he probably is now, too. I mean, he's also got all
the money. Well, like, just lately, he's, like, too big for his britches. And, yeah, people are just like, oh, my God, why would you not make Blue People that is, like, fucking Fern Gully and the Lorax mixed together? That's a great idea.
He does, yeah. And he, like George Lucas, he has all of the money. So I don't think that's right. A lot of people that are telling him no either. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Star Wars Episode One. What was our favorite moments, I guess, of it?
For me, it would be the lightsaber battle, between, Maul, Obi-Wan, and, Qui-Gon. Also in the beginning of the movie, you see that the Jedi can do other stuff, like, you know, they can do the speed burst. They use their lightsabers to basically, like, you know, melt doors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, that's the stuff, like, you start watching, like, oh, this shit, this movie's gonna be awesome! Look at that, you know, you get excited. You get really excited, and then they get to Naboo, and you're like, oh. You know? And then, like, it just slows down. And then, but anyway, the lightsaber parts were really cool. And, the lightsaber parts were really cool. you know. I think for me also.
But those lightsaber parts.
The lightsaber parts was cool. I'm good with that. But like, and also seeing like, you know, like the Jedi Council was neat. And like, you know, when like Yoda was talking about how,
Young Yoda.
So, when Young Yoda was talking with Anakin and they start to slowly, quietly play the Darth Vader theme in the back or the Empire theme in the back quietly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like that shit was cool.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that hurt me most besides Jar Jar, and there's an interesting EW article where they interview Ahmed Best because, mm-hmm. you know, Ahmed took that role thinking, man, he's like, I'm paid for life.
He's like, this is my fucking
meal ticket.
Yeah, this is my meal ticket for the rest of my life. This is my meal ticket
and everything. And like, you know, he took it like a champ, but still, it's kind of a sad story. I mean, he's doing well for himself, but still, it's kind of sad, but he rolled with it, and it was an EW article. It's probably like maybe 4 years old now. If you ever find it, read it. But like it was cool seeing Samuel Jackson as a Jedi, but like Captain Panaka, who like I forget the gentleman's name who actually played Captain Panaka, but he's like a very well established actor, UK actor. But that brother was like the most negative brother I've ever seen in film. No matter what, man, we can't do that. We can't win. What do you mean we're going to try this? I'm like, yo, ain't you supposed to be like Queen Amidala's, like, you know, like, you're supposed to be ride or die for the queen. No, we can't do that. No, I don't think that's safe. I don't think that's a good idea. Won't you man the fuck up and do your job?
My God.
I like that.
All right, I'm sorry. Please continue.
Oh, that's good. Oh, that is the good stuff. We also have Sofia Coppola in this movie. I didn't realize that. And Dominic West from The Wire. A lot of interesting people in this movie. So, Cruz, what were your favorite parts of the film?
Well, I mean, I like the lightsaber. No, I did like the lightsaber parts. I think that I really... You know, I mean, part of me for being disappointed, and I've said this before, is like, I love the premise. I don't like the delivery.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really, like, I wanted the part, like, where Anakin and Queen Amidala or Padme or whatever, where, like, when they meet for the first time, I wanted that to be, like ridiculous. Like, you, like, hear some weird heavens opening up and stuff like that.
You can feel the connection.
Like, I wanted the backstory. Right, I wanted them to be like, they touch fingers and like a zap of electricity or some shit. No, but,
you're a funny little boy. It's like what she says, and he's like, oh, are you an angel?
And I have like mixed emotions, cause like, how old is she? Total cougar, obviously.
I think Natalie Portman, she's probably like 14 or so, I would guess. I don't know. And he's not. Like he's just.
That's not as bad as I thought it was then.
Yeah, I think he's.
I thought she was like, "You're a funny little," you know, like, okay. And another thing, like, I don't know about you guys, but when you're little, I assumed that Darth was Darth Vader's first name.
Yes.
No.
Yeah. Me? Well, absolutely. I thought that's what his name was.
And so, like, they go to like Darth Maul, and I'm like. Really? That's just fucking lazy. They can't come up with another person first name for this? Like, so that was a surprise to me.
There's Rachel Vader, Rachel Maul, Rachel Sidious.
Right? I have no idea. Stupid. I'm stupid. I don't know anything.
That's funny.
But, I don't know.
Yeah, so
that's all I have.
I mean, I think that, much like Sean, I think that my favorite thing is the Ray Park end. And, you know, I watched a lot of behind the scenes stuff and saw how good these guys were with their sticks and how much they had practiced all of the lightsaber battles and all of the stuff. And, you know, saw a lot of the behind the scenes things and was like, oh man, this is going to be really cool. And then when I watched the movie and I'm like, it just doesn't work for me. Like I just don't care, you know, and like I mentioned earlier, everything seems real shiny and real new and not lived in and not a real place, and except for Naboo. And you know, one of the things that I thought was weird was they're on there and the mind tricks they don't work, right? So when he's trying to give him the credits and he doesn't want to take them. And so then he ends up, having the game of chance and he ends up fucking with the dice. And I'm like, God, what a fucking bully. Like, he's just, you know, he's kind of not really that good of a guy, Qui-Gon. Like, yeah, it's for a good cause, I guess, but he's like, you know, he's cheating here, he's trying to manipulate people there, and I'm like, what a bunch of jerk-offs these fucking Jedi are. You know, but you're supposed to be thinking, oh, it's for the best, because obviously slavery is bad, and that's, you know, of course that's like the most broad thing that they could have it be is that they're slaves, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, geez, right. Like how not nuanced can you be? And that's my big problem is everyone is so broad. Like Jake Lloyd is reading this terrible dialogue and he's just like, are you an angel? And that's when I'm like, oh my God, like what is this? Like I've seen stage plays that have better delivery than this. And it makes me think like, is this a George Lucas selection? Like he saw all of these kids and he's like Jake Lloyd and he's like, yes, it has to be him. I can see it.
Well, see, that's funny you mentioned that, because if you I remember my friend had the original prequel box set and had all this bonus material and it was like behind the scenes, and one of the behind the scenes stories was, you know, when they were trying to select you know, an actor to play Anakin, and there was a kid who was amazing as far as the line delivery, delivery, acting, emotion, all of it. He was perfect for it. But Lucas was insistent on that the look of Jake Lloyd was perfect.
Mm.
And once again, you don't have anyone telling you, nah, son, you need to get that other dude.
A little more style over substance, right?
Yeah, style. Yeah, you gotta get this other actor over here. George, you know, but no one said that. George was like, this is what I want. So the producer's like, yeah, all right, go ahead. That's what you want. Let's go. So yeah, man, it was the strangest thing. So when I saw that, I'm like, why would anybody put this on the behind the scenes for this movie?
Yeah, really? Like, why
are you, oh my
like,
God,
why are you just not sunshine pumping? Like, that's what you should be doing.
You know, I'm like, why do this? Like, you're making, like, not only are you making George Lucas look bad, but you are also making, like, but as a producer, you really look stupid because you, nah, never mind. Just,
well, and you're putting it to that poor kid who's like, I could have made millions.
Yeah.
If you only would have cast me. Oh man, that's too bad. Sheesh. So yeah, this was, I mean, for as much as we're hard on the film, I mean, this was nominated for 3 Oscars, which I'm sure are all technical movies. It obviously made a ton of money. You know, I remember seeing the second one maybe once. Like, I've seen this version maybe a half dozen times or so. I saw episode 2 maybe once, and I don't think I've ever seen all of episode 3.
I've seen all of them.
I've seen the end bit, because I know of the no, you know, and all that stuff. I've seen that for sure. So maybe I have seen it, and I just kind of was sort of half paying attention during it.
Right. Well, it's when, like, Hayden Christensen was, like, super popular in that 15 minutes that he was. And, like, I had seen him in Life is a House.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Had, like, a super huge crush on him. And so I was like, boom, I'm watching all these. I don't give a shit if he even talked.
He so did that. He was in, what is it, Broken Glass or Shattered Glass or something like that, I think, also.
I don't know.
That was kind of, like, he was actually really good in that. And I know he also gets a lot of shit for his performances. But it's like, you can't perform something that's written like shit. Like, there's no way to...
Right, he doesn't have a Hamlet-esque dialogue to, yeah.
I mean, so you kind of got, you have to do sort of what you, can do with what you have. Yeah, Shattered Glass is what it was called. That came out in 03, which is between the two Star Wars movies. But that's actually a really good movie and a really good performance.
Mm.
So I really like that. But yeah, he hasn't done much since. I mean, he tried to revive with Jumper, and that didn't do
a lot. Oh, man. Yeah.
That wasn't very good. So, okay, well, what else?
That's another one where I was like, this looks cool.
Yeah, it looks cool. Do we have anything else about Star Wars before we wrap this up? Either one of you. Sean, you got anything else?
I'm gonna...
Darth Maul was awesome, and then he got cut in half. And yet again, we got Boba Fetted.
Oh, yeah, we did.
You know, we got Boba Fetted with said character, because the hype for Darth Maul was so large. The hype for that character was ginormous. And also think about the fact that this movie had so much hype and was so popular. Yeah, it made like, I think, over $1 billion worldwide. But the hype for this film was so massive that, song that's playing during the lightsaber battle between, you know, Qui-Gon, Darth Maul, and
mm-hmm.
Obi-Wan.
Mm-hmm.
Duel of the Fates. Yeah, Duel of the Fates. That song got so much hype that they made a music video for it, which premiered on TRL on MTV.
That's crazy.
Okay. Oh my God.
First daily, baby.
You know, that's how much hype was behind that film. Like, Duel of the Fates had a fucking CD single. All right? It was on TRL.
That's why I'm saying that they should have secretly made a Back to the Future 4 and kept it locked up for like 30 years and released it this year.
Wow. Mm. There it is. Rachel's grand plan.
I'm just saying, think of all... I would go to see that probably like 72 times. That would just be money from me. So there's that.
That's funny. Cruiser, do you have anything else about episode 1?
No.
No. All right, I'm good as well. It was a movie that, you know, that I was really excited for and really tried to like, but it was kind of like, I was glad to watch it just because it confirmed my decision to sell my DVD. And I was like, oh, yeah, that was a good choice. I don't really need to see that again. So if you have any comments for the show,
oh my God,
or movies that you'd like to hear us talk about, you could email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You could follow the show over at Twitter under the handle @plainlabelpod, where you could follow me. I'm at EricWilliams79, and Rachel is at LadyZlag. That is SZELAG. We also have a Facebook page where you could like the show. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. And if you wanted to help us out a little bit, you could either go over to Audible, like we mentioned earlier, or you could head over to Amazon.com and search for our wish list. It's full of the movies that we want, equipment that we need, and a whole host of other goodies in case you're in the giving mood. Just search for the wish list called Plain Label Podcast. And of course, we need to make sure and thank Mr. Sean Pryor for joining us three times out of the four episodes for this theme. And if people wanted to hear more from you, maybe read something by you, where could they go to hear more from Mr. Sean Pryor?
Okay. You can follow me on Twitter at SHAWNRPRYOR, or you can listen to my podcast called The Black Box. You can find that at the HHWLOD Podcast Network at HHWLOD.com. Or you can get the Black Box Podcast on iTunes. Let's see here. Also, if you want to check out some comic books that I've been working on, I have a new studio of my own, Crown Taker Studios. And right now, I'm not sure when this podcast will post, but...
It is tomorrow, my friend.
Oh, it probably posts tomorrow. Well, hot damn. There we go. It's a new day. All right. So check it. When you hear this podcast, I have a Kickstarter going for a comic book called Cash and Carry. It is the debut comic created by me, featuring the writing of Julie Speziani and the artwork of Penny Candy Studios. We created this book together. It is amazing. It's a great all ages comic. go to Kickstarter.com and just check under my name. Type my name in the search header, Sean Pryor, S-H-A-W-N-P-R-Y-O-R. Look at Cash and Carry. Play the video. And if you dig all ages mystery comic books, this is for you. And this is a book for all ages. Adults can read it. Kids can read it. And I think you'll get a kick out of it. And yes, we have hit our goal, but my whole thing is I want this comic in as many hands as possible. And you know, you can get a digital copy for $4. And it's, you know, so you're winning. Trust me. If you get this book, you are winning at life. I'm not just saying that because it's something that I have a hand in. But no, and the only reason why I say that is because, like, I was looking through other Kickstarters. I found somebody at a Kickstarter that was selling, like, digital, and, like, one of the rewards were a digital copy of, like, the first issue for $10.
Woo.
And I'm like, yo, that is bold. like, that is bold. Like, mm-hmm. like, it's not a graphic Baldy. Novel. This is not a graphic novel. You ain't getting 60 pages. You know, you barely probably getting 22.
Mm-hmm.
$10. I was like, man, you a bold motherfucker. I swear, that's bold. But like, you know, we can give you like a digital copy for $4. If for extra dollar, you get a digital copy plus like a postcard. We have all types of reward tiers. We have print copies. We have variant covers. Like all types of really, really cool stuff. So please check it out. It would mean the world to me. To be honest with you, like I said, we were trying to raise $3,600. We're almost at like $5,500. I would love for us to raise $7,000 because it would allow us to not only, you know, get all the rewards done in a quick and a timely manner, but it would also allow us to make all other types of stuff, which would be awesome because that's what I want to do. I want to make stuff. And so, and have fun while making it without feeling stressed. So, please believe, like I said before, mm-hmm. Kickstarter.com, type my name and check out Cash and Carry. Thank you.
All right, there you go. So once again, thank you, Sean. And, you know, if people wanted to really go over and support the podcast, if people didn't see my particular, here's another peek behind the curtain. If people didn't see my particular Facebook feed, I got engaged last weekend.
Yeah, buddy.
So if people wanted to, you know, support us and support the show and support, Anel and I, who is on the show fairly regularly, they could get us some stuff on our Amazon wish list, and that would really help us out a little bit. But for the show, thank you for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with our new theme of revenge movies.